Welcome to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
We just wanted to issue a little content warning. We do talk about gang and domestic violence, assisted suicide and sexual abuse today. If you're not feeling up to it, give this one a miss.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to Required Reading.
I'm Charlie.
And I'm Amy.
And we are two unqualified Otago students.
And in this podcast, we discuss books and sometimes their adaptations, mostly so we can avoid our uni work.
Today on the episode, we are talking about three New Zealand books. They are Owe by Becky Manawatu, The Swimmers by Chloe Lane, Pokahangaitis by Tei Tibble. We're talking about standing New Zealand woman. We're talking about horse gangs in primary school. Poetry? And also the colour of raw chicken breast. Stay tuned to find out more. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
It's good to be back in the studio today.
It's so good.
Yeah, and also for our season finale, it seems correct, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And we love doing the podcast, but it's a lot of work, really.
It's a lot of work, and also at home with the socks over the phones.
Yeah.
Wasn't quite the same.
Look, it was fun.
It was fun.
It was an experience. I'm glad we did it.
For one episode, though.
For one episode, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's enough.
Yeah.
I'm also really excited because I'm really excited about these books
that we're talking about today.
Yeah, this is going to be fantastic. And also a side of books that we haven't really talked about yet.
Yeah.
You know?
We haven't talked about them on the Instagram because we knew we were going to talk about them here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And we are talking about books that are written right here in Aotearoa.
Yeah.
So we've got three books that we're talking about today, all of them by a New Zealand woman. And firstly, I would like to start with is all three of these books are sensational.
They're so good.
And everybody should read them.
They're so, so good. They're some of the best books. They are the best books that I've read recently.
Like, the thing is, okay, so Grace, my sister, if you're watching this, I'm about to call you out.
But whoa.
I recently recommended one of these books to her, and she said, is it good or is it just New Zealand good? And I said,
How dare you? I'll be taking that up with her. We'll be having words.
These books, and, you know, for the record, that is the same thing.
Yeah.
But these are just excellent books.
Yeah.
And the thing is, because they are released in New Zealand with smaller publishers, it's just some people find it more difficult to find them, you know?
Yeah, but smaller is not bad.
No, smaller is not bad at all. It's just more difficult to sort of build hype when there's not many copies around, you know?
Oh, definitely.
And just sort of jumping on that, we kind of wanted to talk about how to find New Zealand books.
Absolutely, yeah. I think one of the things that I think makes it hard to find New Zealand books is I don't think that Whitcoles or like the big maybe this is a bit of a conspiracy, but I don't think they're really that invested in pushing New Zealand work, you know?
You don't think they have artistic integrity?
I don't.
Whoa.
I'm sorry, Whitcoles might
have. Huge call.
I know. I think they're probably more concerned with getting books sold. So they're going to be getting, you know, the big blockbuster books, which a lot of them we do like. Sally Rooney was a blockbuster.
Yeah.
I promised I wasn't going to talk about her today.
Too late.
That's one strike. So I think the key to finding New Zealand books is first and foremost independent booksellers.
Oh, yeah. And then you go into an independent bookseller, you go to a section. Usually they've got a section of like
New Zealand fiction,
New Zealand, fiction, New Zealand poetry, New Zealand nonfiction. And if you're like, oh my gosh, I'm overwhelmed by the number of choices, we've got a few
ways to kind of whittle it down.
So one of my favourites is we've got the Ockham Awards here in New Zealand, and they are book awards. And generally, not the biggest fan of book award novels, ones that are chosen for huge awards, are kind of
like the Man Booker and the
like Man
the
Booker.
Pulitzer.
Every now and then
Pulitzer's
they're good.
Good.
Every now and then they're fine, but they're not usually my favorite books.
No,
Ockham chooses really good books.
Ockham never fucking misses.
Never misses.
Never.
And they're always diverse in terms of genre, in terms of writers, in terms of everything.
Yeah,
and I would just go to Ockham. What their long list is, choose one of those.
Absolutely,
it's got to be good.
Like probably three of my favourite books that I've read in the last 5 years, maybe of all time, have all either been longlisted or won.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. We Can Make a Life as well. Victory Park by Rachel Kerr. All of those are just brilliant. And Ocken knows it.
Yeah, and all three of these books were either won or nominated for the Ockham Awards, and we absolutely love them. So there you go, that's one way.
The other way to look at it is at small New Zealand publishers.
We have
quite a few publishing houses, and one of the ones we're talking about today, which published OA, is the Makoto Press, who they set up in Wellington kind of early 2000s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And they really only publish one fiction book a year, but they're doing it with such, because they're only doing one book, it's always going to be good.
Yeah.
You know, like it's always going to be really, really good. And it's kind of the same deal with the Victoria University Press, as well as the Otago University Press as well, was really, really good. I just bought something from them the other day.
Fabulous. They're just really good publishing houses that have good morals.
Yeah.
They're not about finding the next blockbuster. They're about actually
driving forward
New Zealand talent.
Yeah, exactly. Quality over quantity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So those are just some of our ideas for finding New Zealand books. But where's the best place to start? With the three books we're talking about today.
Absolutely.
So today we're talking about OA by Becky Manawatu, mm-hmm. who is actually currently the Burns Scholar down in Burns Fellow down in Otago Uni.
Yep.
So that's pretty cool.
So the Burns Fellowship is a fellowship that is given to, I think, a fiction writer. I might be wrong about that. It might be any creative writer. Do you know?
I'm not sure.
But it's for a year. It's a kind of an artist in residence thing where she's getting funding so that she can really get some work done on her book while, you know, being part of the university.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's currently writing her second book, which I can't wait for. Oh my
god! But also
goodness.
No pressure. Like she needs time to get it right. You know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But I'm literally on the edge. This is the next Sally Rooney.
This is the next Sally Rooney for me. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, we've already brought her up twice. Okay.
Strike two, three strikes. Yeah. We're out.
Yeah. Okay. So the second book we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Is a little bit less well known. Mm-hmm. OA is pretty popular within New Zealand, but
I think so.
The Swimmers by Chloe Lane.
Yeah.
Is a beautiful book that was long listed for the Ockham Prize mm-hmm. last year, and it's a stunning book. We'll get more into it later. It's a really short and accessible book, so it's a good one to just like pick up. And the cover art
is to die for.
It's absolutely stunning.
I think for judge a book by its cover, we couldn't get a better episode for these.
No.
These books all have fantastic covers, but Chloe Lane does take the prize.
Oh, I don't know.
Really? Tea Table's good too.
Tea Table's covers are sensational.
What a segue.
Yeah.
We're going into Tea Table. So we're talking about Tea Table's first collection of poetry, which we haven't talked about poetry before on the podcast.
No.
And we're both a little nervous, but really excited. So this is Pocahontas. Is that right?
Yeah. And from now on, we'll just say Po, because that's probably the easiest way. And that's how Tea refers to it. She doesn't usually refer to it as the full name.
She normally refers to it as Poe. Okay.
Yeah, in interviews and
that's
such.
Good. So Poe was published in 2018, I think.
Yep.
It was just after Tay Tibble had won So she did a master's in creative writing at the Institute of Modern Letters in Wellington, and she won the best portfolio out of all of the master's students.
Following in the footsteps of like Eleanor Catton, who went on to win Man Booker Prize. So like really famous people come through here.
Absolutely. And then Poe got published after that, and it's just brilliant. We'll get to that when it's her time to shine.
Yeah, and I would like to say, me, Charlie talking, I don't read poetry.
Yeah.
Don't usually like poetry either.
Do you not like poetry, or do you not read any good poetry?
Probably the latter. Sorry,
the former?
I forgot which one you said first. But I don't think, I probably just haven't found the poetry for me, except I have.
Yeah.
Because Tay Tibble tells miniature stories,
mm-hmm.
and they are so coherent, and they make so much sense, and you inherently understand what's going on, but they're also so poignant, and like, you really understand her perspective.
She's just a master of language. Like, it's just so.
And it's short, it's only like 77 pages or something, and it's just like concise. Honestly, if you've
I just remember
on the fence,
when we were
it.
Trying to plan this episode and deciding what we wanted to do with it, and I suggested that we talked about more writers instead of less, and I said we need to talk about Tay Tibble, and you were like, "Oh, poetry, me no likey, no yeah. thanks. Yeah. Very scared. But I was like, I read out one of the poems that we're going to read out later. And Charlie went, I'll be taking that. And then you like...
binge read it,
promptly gave it back to me and then bought her second book.
Yeah, absolutely. The next day, yeah. currently reading that. Oh, just great. Just, she is so talented and I can't wait to see what she does in the future.
Oh my God, I can't either.
I feel like a proud dad.
I do too. I got onto the bandwagon late. Like I only found out about her last semester. But I'm so proud of her.
Yeah.
They grow up so fast.
Tay, if you're listening... We're so proud of you.
And we love you so much.
We love
much.
You so much.
Okay.
Okay.
Before we get too loosey-goosey,
gosh,
we do need to do our fun fact.
Yeah, we do. We really do need to do our fun fact. And let me before we start, Amy,
oh, no.
This better be a fun fact, okay?
We've been having conflict.
We've been having conflict. This. You've given us two just facts.
Two
and one
sad
fun
facts
anecdote.
And one fun anecdote.
I
this
would
season.
Like a fun fact. You did well last season. Why is it proving so difficult?
I don't know.
Okay, do you have one?
I do.
Okay.
So, Tay Tybalt, Queen of Queens, as we know, is not only just a pop, but she is also in our other favourite queen, Lord.
Oh my God.
She's in the video for Solar Power. She's
Hell
part
yeah.
of the hot young set, if you will. She's there living her Solar Power life.
As she should. You know, it's interesting. I feel like we might have read quite similar articles because my fun fact is also about Tay Tybalt and what else she does apart from poetry. So, yes, she's a poet. She's also a club kid in Wellington.
She's a socialite.
She's a socialite.
Half gossip girl.
And she's also a professional astrologist.
I love that.
Like, pop off. She is multi-talented.
She's such a girl.
She can do whatever she
boss.
Wants. Yeah. She
we
is
got
the
a
moment
big
now.
Crush on her. Can you tell?
God, and her Instagram?
Her Instagram is snaps to die
too
for.
Too much. It's too much.
It's so good.
Okay.
Right. Before we even get into it, I just wanted to say that we are conscious of the fact that this episode's not going to be as fun as the other episodes. But like, I think this is the episode that I think is the most important. And the one that I'm actually kind of most excited for.
Yeah.
That's not to say that it won't be enjoyable to listen to.
Mm.
We just love these books and we take them really seriously and we don't want to.
Yeah, we like to think that we've seduced you with our hilarity.
Our chemistry.
Our joyful hijinks.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get you.
Now we're going to get you.
With our book recommendations that you might not have heard of.
The book recommendations we truly care about most.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So if you are going to read any books that we've ever talked about over this entire show.
It's these three. It really is. Right. On that fun note, I will actually start away with a fun anecdote.
Okay.
Which is to do with when I actually met Becky Manawatu. I doubt she remembers this even slightly. But I do. So.
Describe yourself.
So, okay, it's the 2021 Dunedin Readers Writers Festival.
Yeah.
I've volunteered because I do English and I don't participate in anything.
Yeah.
So maybe I should try this year, and I have, and it's been sensational. What a time. And so it's the opening gala, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's, I think, 7 New Zealand writers have been told that they need to write a speech about the future. That's all that they've been told. So it's really like
this
everybody's
is mysterious.
It's very mysterious. So everybody had to take their own take on it.
Yeah.
And we've got lots of famous writers there. We've got Becky, who I was most excited about, and David Eggleton, who's the poet laureate of New Zealand, who I've studied at uni.
Yeah.
And Nalini Singh, who's really, really successful, and all of these people. And so I'm there as a green room attendant, and I'm kind of there to welcome these famous people who I know way too much about because I've read all of their work and make them comfortable before they do this event where they do the talking. So everybody comes in and Becky comes in, and I'm like, oh,
I know who you are.
I know who you are. Like, I'm in love with you. I think it was a good thing. I actually hadn't read OA yet. At that point.
Okay.
But my parents had both read it and they were like, this is the best book we've ever read. And I
Obsessed.
Was like, and I'm actually glad I hadn't read the book because I think I would have had a meltdown.
Yeah, I would have had a meltdown.
If I had, I would have just.
It would have been too much, the power.
But I was trying to stay calm, cool and collected. And so we're standing there and like the organisers had told us to kind of like offer them bubbles and like make them feel at home and welcome. And so there's kind of an hour and a half before they start because nobody in Dunedin knows how to get anywhere on time.
Yeah.
And so we're pushed back a little bit. Everybody has declined having bubbles because, you know, they just want to be clear mind. Mm-hmm. And I say to everyone, I go, do you guys want some bubbles now that it's been delayed?
Yeah.
And they go, and most of the people at the table go, actually, yes. And Becky kind of goes, oh, I don't know. She goes, I'd have a glass if I could have just half.
Yeah.
Could I share it with someone? And nobody's saying anything. Nobody's saying anything.
Yeah.
And I'm standing in the corner and I go, I'll have the other half, Becky.
Take every opportunity that's presented.
And the whole table like turns around and looks at me and goes, oh, Dunedin students. Anything.
They would. Anything for free
and
alcohol.
I go, free bubbles. And so she comes over and she pours half of the glass of very nice bubbly wine into my water glass. And I stand there being like, just share a glass of wine with Becky. Oh my God. Like, can life get better than this?
Oh my goodness. So actually,
and then it did because I listened to her speech and it was transcendent.
Of course it
and
was.
And I was inspired and yeah, so that's my fun anecdote.
So, yeah, we should have said from the outset that, yeah, Amy and Becky are really close friends.
A biased review.
Really close friends.
Yeah.
They go way back, as you can hear. Have you seen her since?
No.
Okay. So,
not ever. Not ever again.
But good friends.
But really close friends.
Close friends.
She's a bosom friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's get into Owe.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Got my very special story out of the way.
Thank you. So can you give us a little bit about what Owe is about?
Yeah, so I think the best way to sum it up is actually mm-hmm. the blurb that Marketo Press put out with the book.
Easy.
I tried to kind of do it myself, but the words that they've thought of are actually just better. What a surprise. Okay.
Shocking.
Tokiri was born into sorrow. Owe can be heard in the sound of the sea he loves and hates, and in the music he draws out of the guitar that was his father's. It spills out of the gang violence that killed his father and sent his mother into hiding, and the shame he feels about abandoning his 8-year-old brother to a violent home. But Arama is braver than he looks, and he has a friend, and his friend has a dog, and the three of them together might just be strong enough to turn back the tide of sorrow. As long as there is Aroha to give and stories to tell and a good supply of plasters. Here is a novel that is both raw and sublime, a compelling New Zealand voice in New Zealand fiction. Haere mai, Becky Manawatu.
Stun.
Chills. Already read it.
Oh, I want to read it again right now.
I know, me too.
Gosh, this book is so good. And what they don't really bring up there is, yeah, there's Tokiri and there's Arama, but there's mm-hmm. also another story that is sort of being told at the same time, and that's the story of Jade
and Toku. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another beautiful story. And sort of the way that the book is structured is it's like swaps between those three characters'
yeah.
perspectives in like each chapter.
Yeah.
You know, so you're seeing kind of three parallel storylines, and honestly, that makes it the most gripping book in the entire world.
Well, because you get these self-contained snapshots into each person's life.
Yeah.
And by the end of the chapter of that, you know, you've had Artemis chapter and
yeah.
you go, okay, time to put the book down. But then you see that there's Jade and you go, what's going
what
on
happened
with
next
Jade?
In Jade?
yeah. What's Jade up to?
Oh my God, I haven't seen Jade in a while.
Oh, really? Like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And so you just keep going. And that is why during the exam leave of first semester 2021, I spent 2 days only reading Owe.
That's why I read this in 48 hours.
Yeah.
And it's not a small book.
It's not at all.
It's not a big book either, but...
But, you know when you're reading a book and you... I call it the point of no return.
Yeah.
There's a point at which, no matter what time of night it is, no matter how many things you have to do, once you hit that point, you have to keep going.
Yeah. And me and Amy were talking about what that point was in Owe, and we decided that it was when Jade's storyline began.
Because it starts a little later.
Yeah. And we were like, oh, it must be like probably like a third of the way through the book. No, probably like...
A sixth. It's like page 15.
And we were like, God, we can't put it down.
And I was like, can't be going to the library today.
It was so early
and
on.
I have absolutely no regrets.
No, it's honestly such a gorgeous
such
book.
Such a good book. I wanted to introduce Becky a little bit.
Yeah.
Just because she's so cool. She's so cool. So she's, by trade, she's a reporter for the Westport News. Mm-hmm. She comes from the West Coast, essentially. And it took her about 6 years to write OA and to get it right.
God, you can tell.
She's Ngāi Tahu and Ngāti Mamau and Waitaha and also Pākehā descent. Mm-hmm. And all of those kind of threads of, I guess, history are all kind of interwoven through her stories. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She also said in a Stuff interview that part of her like ethos as a writer has come from her own experience being taught writing in primary school, and that there was absolutely no te reo Māori being taught at all, and the voices that were amplified were upper crust English classics like Pride and Prejudice, which she did love and we do love, but there was no teaching about literature by strong Indigenous voices.
Still isn't.
There still isn't, exactly. No. It's better now that I've been in university. They make a lot more of a effort to have a diverse range of people, especially the creative writing courses. But
the problem is it's almost like a little too late.
Yeah,
you need to reach the masses at school.
Well, when I moved to, because I had spent the first 10 years of my life in Australia, and when we moved back when I was 10 to go to primary school in New Zealand in Timaru, I was really excited because I was like, oh my God, I can learn te reo Māori. And because I just assumed that that would just be like a baseline.
A compulsory subject.
And it just wasn't.
Yeah.
We had Fire Cathy came like once a term and we sung the Māori alphabet and that was it. And like,
it's pretty shocking.
It's so shocking. It's horrible. But yeah, so like all of these things, I think, add quite a bit of like understanding to like Becky as a writer and I guess why the book is so good. She's been thinking about a lot of things and thinking about them for a long time.
Yeah, you can definitely see the influences of her whakapapa and the way that shows in the book. It's really a book of contrast. Like it's brutal.
Yeah.
But it's also beautiful.
And hopeful. Yeah.
And harsh and truthful but also a little bit fantastical. Like, you know, it's a lot of different things all happening at the same time.
But definitely I think the point about whakapapa is really salient because I think there is a jump between past and present in the book.
Yeah.
And it's not just about these characters that we've mentioned. It's about their entire families and their family histories as well. And so that makes the book really rich.
Yeah.
And the relationships within the books really real and really rich as well.
Absolutely.
It's just
fantastic. It's just fantastic.
So good. I think the other thing to say about the point of view, how they have the different points of view.
Yeah.
Is I think sometimes that can come off a little gimmicky. You know,
in other books,
that the kind of like now it's so and so's chapter.
Because nothing changes apart from the name that they throw at the top.
That it's like now it's Charlie, now it's Amy. But the actual writing doesn't change. But in OA, it is so obvious. You don't even need the chapter titles to know who you're reading.
No, and you honestly don't.
That's just such a good mark of characterization.
She actually changes the way that she writes every single chapter. I noticed it, especially with Tokiti, the sentences were a lot more short and succinct and to the point. His chapters in general were a lot shorter. Yeah. And, you know, Jade was a lot more lyrical and obviously Artima was a lot more simplistic.
Observant as well.
And observant because he was an 8-year-old boy. And honestly, I've never seen a writer imbue so much personality and realism into an 8-year-old boy's voice before.
And it's such a loving portrayal of a child because it's not just like, oh, you know, he's so young and so inexperienced, I guess.
Yeah.
She takes Artima really seriously.
Yeah.
You know, like he is his self-contained person and he's wonderful and he's layered and I think that's awesome. And I think we have to talk about Artima and Tokiti's relationship as brothers.
Oh my goodness. It's so stunning.
Yeah.
Just the familial bond that they feel and it sort of goes back to that whole whakapapa, the genealogy, you know, the strength of whānau and how that can transcend distance.
Yeah, and being separated.
And even though, you know, this happens right at the beginning, Tokiri drops Arama at his uncle and auntie's house to live with because things have occurred and he needs to leave.
Yeah.
So they're separated by an island. Tokiri moves to Wellington.
So it's not a plot. It's not a spoiler to say that. So Tokiri and Arama's parents have recently died. This happens before the book starts.
Oh, yeah.
Tokiri and Arama have been orphaned, essentially. And the book is about how they deal with that and what revelations come as they deal with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Arama's been left at his Auntie Kat's house in Kaikoura and Tokiri's gone to Wellington. And so the stories are separated by time and space.
Yeah.
But what's not... What Tokiri is running away from a lot of things, I think.
Yeah.
Especially early on in the book. But he can't
let it go.
He can't let Arama go.
No.
And how could you? He's just the best.
He's an angel.
He's such
literally an angel.
He literally is.
I would do anything for that boy. Seriously.
One of my favorite things about Arama is his thing with Band-Aids.
His plasters. Oh my God. So every time he gets cut or anything, or a bruise, he puts a plaster over it. But also, every time he feels sad, or he feels angry, worried, anxious, he also puts plasters all over him. And the more plasters that he puts on, the better he starts to feel.
And it's just, it's one of those child logic things.
Yeah.
Which is so...
And like, it makes sense.
It makes absolute sense.
You know? And it's just, it's really, it actually says a lot about Arama as a character.
It's also, exactly.
You know, he's quite internal. He's very much like, I'm going to deal with this on my own.
Especially now that he is on his own.
Yeah. He just needs to bandage himself up until Tokiri can get back to him. Oh. Honestly.
Yeah.
This book. It'll get you.
Yeah, it will. It'll get you in all of the ways.
Yeah.
In the laughter, in the sadness,
in
the hope. And the joy, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, that is a really lovely aspect of the book. But, you know, the book also doesn't shy away from
a lot of
darker aspects of really specifically New Zealand issues.
Yeah.
Such as gang violence, domestic violence, violence against women.
Yeah.
And this is all portrayed incredibly realistically and brutally.
But very nuanced.
Very nuanced. Like, every character is so much more than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
You know, like, every sort of, like, let's take a gang member, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You start out being, like, evil, villainous, awful.
Mm.
But then it's sort of, you strip back the layers, such as Jade's dad. Jade's dad is the head of a gang.
Yeah.
And naturally you're like, that can't be good. But he's actually a really good dad to Jade.
Yeah, he's a fantastic
dad. And Jade loves him.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's like, you actually see these multifaceted characters struggling with the oppression of society and also...
And especially white supremacy that makes gangs... that's the whole reason why gangs exist.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think it just shows like the difficulty of leaving gangs and how ingrained it is in New Zealand culture.
I think it just takes this topic, which is so often thrown... Gang violence and especially... The mongrel mob is often just thrown about in media and in the news and across political party lines, I think, as just kind of like, this is what's happening, this is how bad it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's the way that the kind of gang violence part of, and not even the gang violence, the gang part of this book is completely humanizes the people that are in the gang, you know?
Absolutely.
In a way that I think is probably the best portrayal I've seen personally. Yeah,
absolutely. And
it's very empathetic.
It's incredibly empathetic.
And I don't know, you just get it felt like such a fresh perspective.
Yeah, it really did. And like, she just strikes such a good balance between showing what it's really like to be a victim of domestic violence or gangs, but also what it's like to be involved and what it's and how difficult it is to leave. And I just thought it was really fantastic the way that she discussed these things.
Definitely.
Especially through Tokiri's story.
Yeah.
Thought that was And Jade's story, actually.
Yeah.
And Artemis' story, actually. So all of the story. All of them. the whole story, the whole book, I guess you could say.
The best thing about the gang, like, element of the story is it is never a plot device.
No.
It's never just, you know, it's never used as, like, a quick fix of action or, like...
It's actually part of their world.
It's part of the world. It's part of the characters.
Yeah.
It never feels forced.
No.
It's very natural. It's very, I don't know, it's very real. Not that I've been in a gang.
I've kind of been in a gang. In year one, I did have a gang called The Herd, and we would gallop around primary school.
Oh my God, I had a gang, a horse gang. Was it horses?
It was horses, and yeah. We would gallop around. We were called The Herd, and if you want to be part of The Herd, you had to beat somebody who was already in the herd in a sprinting race.
In a galloping race.
That person, the sole person would be kicked off. We would just sort of slowly increment. We wanted to increase the speed.
You wanted to get the entire school in the herd.
Yeah, but, you know, we were sort of, the first four people that were involved were pretty quick, so it was, you know, quite hard to join the herd. It was quite hard.
I had the stables.
Yeah, so yeah. Pretty similar. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's a similar gang to the ones portrayed in OA, but
the
I've been in one.
The stakes were high.
God, when you're at that starting line, knowing that if you lose, he's in the herd. Gosh, that is intense. Another thing that I'd like to say is, name a better love story than Jade and Tuku.
Oh, you can't.
I'm waiting.
You can't. You absolutely can't.
I'm waiting. They are hot.
They're
and
so
sexy.
Hot and sexy.
Butterflies on my stomach every time. Like, when they go on their yacht.
Oh my God. The yacht.
Fuck it up.
God, it was so good. It was
and the
so
way
good.
That just their bodies were described. But you know that it would be like, I just like coming out of the water. No.
You're this blushing. You're actively blushing in the studio
high
right now.
This was eroticism. This was 50 Shades of Grey.
No,
this,
it wasn't.
It wasn't, but it was for me.
it
really
hit
sent
Charlie
me.
Different.
It did. It was, ugh. And, but also, like, yeah, sexy, but also lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were a perfect fit for each other, and the love was actually palpable.
Their love was so, so real.
So real.
And it wasn't always, it wasn't perfect.
No.
You know, but it was so, God, it was intoxicating. I think that's part of the reason why you can't stop reading.
And it's such a different story to the other two. All three of them had such different stories, which makes it so interesting to read.
Yeah. What about Beth?
Beth? Beth is like the little girl who is the next door neighbour when Artema moves in with Auntie Cat.
Yeah.
And she becomes really good friends with Artema and quite simply is the goat.
She's just so...
She is sassy.
Yeah.
She's
funny.
Fabulous. She's funny. She stands up for herself and others.
She's crazy and wild.
And free.
Yeah.
She's just awesome.
And she's got an obsession with Django Unchained.
I know.
As a tiny child. And she won't stop talking about Django Unchained. And I think that's such like an oddly specific detail. It's the same with like Ari's Band-Aids.
But it's also like such a realistic detail. Like if you were a 9-year-old and you could watch Django Unchained, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
Wouldn't you watch an R16 movie on repeat?
Yeah.
Absolutely, I would. Like, she's just...
She's just such... Like,
and she's so morally...
Ambiguous.
Moral.
She's just so morally moral,
you know?
She has a moral... She has a moral compass.
She sure does.
And boy, does she use it.
Yeah.
She's just such... I think she's such a fun and refreshing female character as well.
Yeah.
Because she's so bold and so unapologetic and so fun. And she's not always good.
No.
You know, she's naughty. She's naughty. Okay.
She's one of those classic kids that's like a little bit naughty but so charismatic that you can never be mad at them for very long.
You can just like,
you know,
feel how intelligent she is.
Yeah.
You know, you can feel it coming off the page. And the love and friendship that she has with Ari is amazing. Oh my God.
Stunning.
I thought, honestly. When I was researching the Makaro Press. They had a lot of reviews.
Oh.
And there was one review which I think just sums up the book so much.
Yeah.
I would like to hear it. That I thought I would just read out as is.
Thank you.
It actually didn't say who said it. Or maybe it did and I didn't see it. But it's on the Makaro Press page of Away. So it says, this is the kind of social realist New Zealand fiction I'm thrilled to see being published in New Zealand. I finished reading this at 2:30 a.m. with my heart thumping in my chest as I accelerated through the last 100 pages towards the end. I'll never forget that feeling. And so powerful is this book that I spent the next few days in a kind of book hangover.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is...
God, isn't that true?
Such a good way to sum it up. It's thrilling.
It is the sort of book that whatever book you read afterwards, you're not going to like that much. It's a real... Like, I know that to be true.
It's one of those books that you spend about 3 weeks at least actively thinking about the characters once the book is over and grieving them because they're not in your life anymore and hoping for the best, you know?
Yeah. And, okay, here... Do you know what is something that I found really refreshing and the way that just imbues this entire book with the fact that it is written by a New Zealand author is the usage of te reo and traditional tikanga Māori customs.
Yep.
And I just thought it was like...
Even just small references.
Just small references. And it was just like, no translation.
No.
You just have to know.
Yeah.
And
if you don't know, you find out.
And if you're a... New Zealand, you probably know everything anyway, but it's just like...
It's very accessible.
Very accessible. It was just like really nice to actually read that.
It was so nice. It's one of those books, I think the best way, and I don't want to talk about it too much because like obviously we don't want to give away the plot.
No.
It's such a special book and such a treat to read that like...
We can't.
We don't want to set it up too much.
No.
It can't be set up too much. You can't get your expectations too high.
No.
But I don't want to do that. But... this is the book to get you back into reading.
Absolutely.
This is the book that it's just one of those books that you consume.
And I tell you what, I am so excited for the second one to come out that follows some of the same characters. I'm not going to say who.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was connected.
Me neither.
But I was listening to a really fantastic Radio NZ interview that you can just find if you Google Becky Manawatu, Radio NZ.
Yeah.
And it was recorded at the Reader Writer Festival. I couldn't go to that session because I was running around doing things. But I hate that I said that. But anyway, she talks about in that audio, she talks about her new book and how it's related. It's in the same world as OA, and she just said that there's too much more story to be told.
Isn't there just?
And there's too many characters that need to be explored more and that need to have a voice. And she read out about 1,000 words of the new book. And it was a draft. Like, she hadn't finished it. Brilliant.
Of course
brilliant.
It was.
And I was just like, oh, Becky, you've done it again.
And when I was talking to Amy, my one critique was like, oh, there was just this one character that I didn't feel like... Got their dues. They weren't fleshed out enough. And Amy goes, well, just you wait.
Just you wait.
Because it's that exact character that is being explored in this
and
new
Charlie
book.
And Charlie went, oh, well, I don't have any. I have no criticisms.
I guess there's nothing wrong. It's a 10 out of 10 book. Seriously, this is a 10 out of 10.
This is top one of my favourite books.
This is definitely in my top one. Seriously. Absolutely. I think we've said enough about OA. Just go read it. We love it, obviously.
Yeah.
We're now going to take some time to hear from UBS and what book they're giving away this week. All right, so we are with Anna from UBS at the moment, here to discuss some new and upcoming books that are about to be released. So, Anna, what books are we talking about this week?
Kia ora. So I'm pretty excited about the first one I've got here. It's The Silent Patient, and it's by Alex Michaelides. So it's a crime book, and there is a possibility that it's actually going to be made into a movie. Some people have optioned it, which means they've got the rights to decide what to do with the script. So that's really exciting. I have to say, this is probably one of my favourite crime books that I've read. And it's about Alicia, who supposedly has a perfect life until she shoots her husband dead five times.
Well, that'll do it.
Indeed. And then she doesn't say a word after that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's about this therapist who goes in and talks to her and tries to understand and find out what's going on. And then there's a really big plot twist, which I didn't see coming at all, which I think probably made me even more enraptured with the book. And Alex has also written a book that's just come out called The Maidens.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, that looks at the death of a student in Cambridge. And there's a clique that goes around with a particular professor. They're called the Maidens. Mm-hmm. And it's all about a web of jealousy and rage and how this is shown and explored by the characters.
Is it kind of like The Secret History?
Oh, I have to admit, I actually haven't read that yet.
It's similar. There is a murder in, I think, Stanford. By Donna Tartt.
Yes,
and it is also a click with the professor. Really good book. I have been meaning to read The Maidens too.
Okay.
So it's that dark academia kind of.
Yes, that does sound similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I highly recommend those two. And so the book that's being given away is The Silent Patient. And then another book plug is with Sally Rooney. Now, you might remember her because she wrote Normal People. And that was a Netflix
There was a Hulu.
Oh, Hulu. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Cool. You can obviously tell I read books. Don't watch much TV. Yeah. And she also wrote Conversations with Friends.
Yeah.
And so the new book that she's got coming out is Beautiful World, Where Are You? And that's due to be published this month. Mm-hmm. So keep your eyes open for that one.
It's sure to be a
really good read.
Gosh, those all sound sensational, and I feel like I need them intravenously right now.
I know,
okay,
right?
Like just the heart.
Stop studying.
Yeah.
Like unenroll from
Sorry,
university.
I decided to drop out, Mum.
Don't tell me twice.
Too many good books. All right. Well, thank you so much, Anna.
You're welcome.
If you would like to go in the chance to win The Silent Patient, then head over to our Instagram at Required Reading, and you could go in the draw to be the lucky winner. All right, welcome back. We're now moving on to our second book.
Before we go.
Yeah?
Before we move on from Ole, I would like to say that we have done this podcast in its full self before. Do you remember?
Yeah.
It was Rio week,
yep.
Okay? We'd had a conversation at the end of last semester where I said we have to do Ole, and you hadn't read it yet.
I hadn't read it, so I read it over the holidays.
And we come back. We've had a big night. It's about 2:30. We're both pissed.
Plastered,
trolleyed, rinsed, if you will.
Yeah, and when me and Amy come home together when we're absolutely rinsed, we go, your bed or my bed?
Yeah, we go, cuddle time.
We go, cuddle time.
We put on our matching jammies, okay, and we get into bed. But this night was different, okay? We had, one of our flatmates had her brother's friends staying. There was 10 extra people in our flat of
and they
already
were all from
seven.
Lincoln University farming people.
And
so not really me and Amy's.
The atmosphere was really bizarre. And three of them were sleeping in the hallway outside of Charlie's room.
Yeah.
And we get in and we start shouting at each other in agreement, which is what we do often when we're really discussing things we're passionate about. We're drunk, but we talk for an hour and a half about OA and how much we love it and how good it is.
And I tell you what, that conversation, I mean, this is just in my memory, but it was good.
It was
real
good.
We were coming
good.
Up with some good points. But the funniest thing is that I really hope that there was some, like, passed out 18-year-olds outside our
Being
door that
like,
was woken up.
What the fuck are they talking about?
It's like, it's about systemic racism. My
so
gosh.
I just didn't want us to forget our roots and where we came from, you know. And so, you know, this episode's probably not going to live up to that that discussion that evening. But
I wish we'd recorded it.
I wish we had to.
But oh well, you know, it's too late. It lives on in our memories and it wouldn't be that good if we did record it. So it's probably good. It's just
I'm sorry.
Memories.
Let's go on to The Swimmers.
Okay, so we're now talking about The Swimmers by Chloe Lane. And again, I just want to bring up this cover. The cover is like...
it's everything I want in a cover.
It's a modern art piece.
Yeah.
Like, it's an actual painting that they've recreated onto the cover.
Mm-hmm.
It is
the
stunning. It's by
gorgeous.
Nicholas Farquhar, the painting, and it's called Peach Thief. Stunning. So just look up The Swimmers online. Beautiful. Okay.
It's just... and then it's only the painting and everything else is white.
Oh.
And the font, like if I was able to judge a book by its cover for this one, for the first time, it wouldn't even be a 10 out of 10. It would be a billion out of 10. I know. Whoa. Huge call.
Huge call.
Huge call from me.
Also, the typography.
The typography is everything.
Fabulous.
It'll be on the Instagram.
We will be posting it. But yeah, so we're talking about The Swimmers by Chloe Lane. And again, I'm just going to take the little synopsis from the publisher because... Yep. Does a great job. It's very succinct. All right, so Erin's mother has motor neuron disease and has decided to take her fate into her own hands. As Erin looks back at her 26-year-old self, she can finally tell the story of the unimaginable task she faced one winter. Mm-hmm. So as you can kind of get from that description...
Really cheerful.
It's about a...
Yeah.
A woman's mother who has decided that she no longer would like to live and would like her daughter to assist in her suicide. But it's a lovely book.
It is.
It is a lovely book.
That's the thing. It's like, I think it's one of my, it's such a good book. It's actually about family.
It's not about that.
Yeah.
It's also about, it's about coping.
Yeah.
That's the major thing. Yeah. It's about the daughter coping.
Yeah.
And just making it through difficult 4 days.
Everybody grieves differently.
Yeah.
It came out at an interesting time. She didn't intend it to come out when it did.
Yeah.
Which was at the exact time. It was kind of last...
August?
September, August. And it was just as we were going into... the general elections and the end of life referendum so that's when I read the book.
Yeah.
And so timing, kind of brilliant. Like
timing of that, brilliant. Timing of me reading it, terrible.
Terrible.
Terrible timing. I finished reading this book on the same day that my grandmother unfortunately passed away. So great timing for publishing. Not
terrible
great timing
for
you reading.
To read it.
Still liked it, though. And I want to say, there is another iconic auntie character in this book. And her name is Auntie Wynne.
Auntie Wynne is the goat.
She is the goat, and she is also literally my Auntie Caroline.
Yeah.
100% the house down boots.
She's my Auntie Bridget.
We all know a Kiwi woman like Auntie Wynne.
Yeah.
No nonsense, gets on with stuff. Kind of seems dismissive, but then the second that, you know, somebody is attacking a member of your family, Mama Bear
comes
out.
She's right there.
She's fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool the way that Auntie Wynne kind of comes out of this story. We're hearing this story from Erin's point of view.
Yeah.
And Erin's, she's not a likable character, really.
Oh my God, no. She's a shit person.
And the way that Auntie Wynne is kind of introduced is Erin's like, we hate Auntie Wynne. Like, so Auntie Wynne's the mother's sister, obviously.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not, obviously. And so we introduced, and you know, the way that we read books is that we, it's our like inclination to trust and agree with the narrator.
Yeah.
And so you kind of meet Auntie Wynne being like, we hate you. Like,
yeah.
Erin said,
you're
annoying.
Yeah.
You're annoying and you're mean. But then throughout the book, you just can't help but just absolutely fall in love with Auntie Wynne. And
but it's
Uncle
also at
Cliff.
The same time that Erin falls in love with them.
Absolutely.
You know, like, you slowly see Erin actually relying on Auntie Wynne a lot in ways that she didn't expect that she would.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's lovely, it's beautiful. I love Auntie Wynne. I don't like Erin, but that's also the point.
Yeah.
Erin is coping with, you know...
The biggest event of her life.
Yeah,
quite
huge,
frankly.
Obviously. Like, you can see why she would be grieving, obviously. But she grieves in such... a fascinating way that I haven't really seen portrayed in books, TV, movies, yada yada. You kind of see like the sad, sometimes the angry, sometimes the bizarre, but she just acted out in really uncharacteristic ways that didn't really make sense. And I remember telling Amy after one particular event like this happened, I was like, what the fuck? Why does she do that?
Yeah.
And Amy just goes, well, you just keep reading and it makes sense. And it does. Because by the time you finish the book, it's like, that's just how she's coping with.
Well, the thing is, as you read this way that she's coping, and you kind of go, oh, that's not realistic. Why would someone, like, I wouldn't, like, no one would do it. But the thing is that it is realistic because of, like, precisely because it's so specific and it's so kind of unusual the way that she grieves.
Yeah.
And it's not really about that. It's more about, oh no, it is about that. I'm just.
But the way that I really liked the way that Chloe Lane didn't spell it out for you.
No.
Like you're an idiot. You know, she actually trusted the reader to put all the pieces together and for it to make sense.
And so the book occurs over 3 days.
Yeah.
Which is a short timeline. You don't often read a book that's that concentrated.
Yeah.
I guess. And so you get to know these people really well,
mm-hmm.
but only over this brief time.
When they're also not acting like themselves.
They're not acting like themselves.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really hard thing to pull off, and Chloe bloody did it.
Yeah.
And I have to talk about Uncle Cliff.
Oh, my God.
Uncle Cliff, he's one of those, like, stereotypical kind of southern men, you know? Like, he's quiet, and he works on his farm mostly, and he doesn't really talk about what he's feeling. But you just get a sense of what he's feeling through his actions and how, like, carefully thoughtful he is. Like a example of that I can kind of think of is that he grows cabbages because he has this friend in town who likes kimchi, and she wants to sell kimchi at the market, and so he now grows cabbages for her. And like, that seems like such a simple thing for him to do, but it's like so telling. Like it's so,
so nice.
And it just reveals this like inner sensitivity that Cliff has, and I just always stan Cliff.
And he is a really quiet character, and he's also not, you know, he's not a major character, but he actually has a really distinct impact on Erin in the way that she reacts to everything that's going on in the book. So he's actually a really important character.
Absolutely.
And just fabulous. Auntie and Uncle. Oh.
Yeah, I know.
They are awesome.
Slay the house down boots.
Seriously.
The other thing I wanted to say is it's a funny book.
Yeah.
One wouldn't think that a book about assisted suicide would be funny.
Yeah.
But it is. And it's that kind of irreverent New Zealand humour. And it just makes like the setting so rich and so real, and the language is so good. So I've got a little bit that I thought about for months after reading it.
Yeah.
Is this... So it says, this is introducing Auntie One. Okay.
Yeah.
She was wearing a tracksuit the exact colour of raw chicken breast. Her hair was wet and combed back. Her hair was wet and combed back from her face in such a way that gave her the slightly threatening look of a crime family matriarch. She had returned from her aqua aerobics class. And so there's this...
Don't you immediately know who... At least a portion of Auntie Wynn.
Absolutely, you can see her.
You can see her. You know who she is.
And so it's that observational writing, which we both just really enjoy.
And another sort of funny, weird little bit. When Erin first meets Craig. Mm-hmm. Craig. I don't know why I said it like Craig. Craig. That was really weird. I've never seen Craig like that.
He might be a Craig.
I don't agree with the pronunciation of Craig. I don't...
Craig.
You can't ignore both letters.
But, like, my point to you is, like, imagine carrying a baby inside of you for 9 months to push it out of your vaginier and to call it Craig.
No.
Like, imagine...
But if it was called Craig, then I'd be... So, when Erin first meets Craig...
Yeah.
He's lying in the pool, and he's got, like, his chest out of the water... And his cat is, like, sleeping on his chest. And it's really stuck with me.
It's really stuck with me.
I can't get that vision out of my head. And you know what? Neither can Erin, because she brings it up a lot.
Well, the other thing that I've kept in my head that also my dad has that we've commented on just independently to each other, which is there's this, not even really the scene that, it says something about Auntie Wynn having to do the vacuuming. And then it says, you know, everybody longs to see the freshly vacuumed lines on a carpet.
God.
Like those lines that you... So you know that the carpet's been freshly vacuumed because of the lines.
Don't we just...
I think about that all the time. Every time I vacuum, I'm like, Chloe Lane, like, that was such a good one. Like,
that was such a good line. And it's just... Yeah, this is a beautiful book. It's really short, although...
Yeah, it is a little divisive, though.
It is divisive. I did have one problem with it. Sort of, there is this subplot, I would say,
mm.
surrounding Erin and a cousin called her cousin called Bethany, and it deals with it alludes to abuse,
yeah.
sexual abuse, and this isn't really explored or commented on. It's sort of just alluded to, and that's yeah. kind of all. And I don't know, I sort of found that disappointing because it didn't need to be there. It was unnecessary.
Mm.
It,
yeah.
The it wasn't necessary mm. for the plot.
I didn't pick up on that personally when I read it. Like, yeah. I did notice it, and I did think it was a bit... like, but I didn't have a problem with it when I read it. But since yeah. we've talked about it and since you've read it, I do agree. I think it was...
Yeah. But I think it's such a minor part
yeah,
of the book.
Is.
Like... definitely the good outweighs
I think
that small critique.
With the swimmers, I mean, I don't want to say be prepared to not like it. I think you probably will. It's a really good book. It's really well written and it's really careful and considerate. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know people that didn't enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, of course, it's dealing with some pretty heavy themes. So if you aren't ready to
well, you don't
read
have
that sort of book, then... take your time. You
absolutely.
Don't need to read it right now.
And also, you don't have to like it just because we say you need to like it. Unlike OA, which you do need to like.
And if you don't like it, please promptly leave
us.
New Zealand and never speak to us again. Okay. I don't think you can be a
and
New Zealand citizen.
And if you don't like it, just a little bit of shush now. Thank you.
A little bit of a... I'm not talking with you.
Oh, no.
Oh, stop that now. A little bit of that. Okay, so let's move on to... our final book. This is Pocahontas
yep.
by Te Tibble.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful poetry collection.
The title was a play on Pocahontas.
Yes.
With
a Tadeo sort
with
of
the Tadeo kind of
spelling and pronunciation.
Yeah. There's a word
she,
for
she
that.
Explains,
there's
she,
a word for that.
She explains it in the intro.
Yeah.
Or the outro?
There's something.
One of them.
It's explained. Pocahontas is a hybridized word of my own invention, phonetically mimicking Pocahontas. It has no literal Māori translation, though po in Te Reo Māori means pillar or pole, and kaha means power or strength.
Mm.
So, po. Po. Let's get down to it. I first came across Te Tibble, as I said earlier,
mm-hmm.
Last semester when I was doing a poetry and music paper run by Dr. Lindley Edmeads, who is a girl boss. Love
yeah.
her so much. She's actually the editor of Landfall, which is like New Zealand's, it's like New Zealand's poetry. It's the place where you do this, the things well. It's a magazine.
What?
It's like the magazine.
The magazine. Gotcha.
You know, for poetry in New Zealand. It's
yeah,
like
yeah.
the place. And so I was introduced with Tay's poem called Identity Politics, which we'll talk about later. And I was so struck by it that, like, class ended and I said, marching over you over to UBS right now, this minute, this moment. And I picked up her book. And, like, honestly, this collection of poetry is probably, like, one of my biggest inspirations or, like, influences on my own writing at the moment. Like, it's just so good.
It's so good.
So to introduce Tay a little bit, she is a young Māori wahine poet, and she's fucking brilliant.
Yeah. So both of her books so far have been published by the Victoria University Press, and actually, recently she has got a book deal to have both
yeah.
sets of poetry be published in America,
yeah.
which is fucking cool.
That's
go
so
her,
good.
Taking over the world.
Globalization.
Yeah, hell yeah. But, and she's talked quite a lot about identifying as urban Māori
mm.
in that she connects a lot with her whakapapa
yeah.
and that impacts her writing a lot, but doesn't ignore the fact that New Zealand has been colonised and colonisation
well,
is a massive theme in her poetry.
Her kind of thing that she talks about with urban Māori is that she has been, because of colonisation, she's been forcibly removed from her whakapapa.
Yeah.
And so she's in this process of reconnecting.
Yeah.
And that she does have some connection, but there's this kind of, I don't know, abstractness
mm.
that she's navigating, I think, at least, in her poetry, which is really interesting and really powerful.
It's so good.
I think. And I think the point about whakapapa is really a good one that we brought up with Becky Manawa too as well, is that she is definitely, I don't know, she's exploring her whakapapa through her poetry. So there's
yeah.
these layers of time and space. And so...
It really does transcend so much more than just her.
Yeah.
She, you can really see that she is one in a large tree, a large linkage, yep. You know? And she explores time way, way, way back.
But also in the future as
well. And also in the future, you know, it's really exploratory. It's exploratory.
And it's so layered and it's so, I don't know, it's just so good. So good.
It's so good.
So I think the best way to introduce Tay is to read some of her poetry.
So we're each going to read one poem.
Yeah.
And we've chosen fairly short ones. There are some longer ones. Just to kind of give you a taste of what you'd be getting.
Because we're also cognizant that not a lot of people read poetry. I know that I have only just started really reading poetry for myself.
I started with this exact book. Well, so,
you know, I do poetry in my degree, but I've never really read it by choice until this book really started it all. And so I'm going to read Identity Politics, which was the poem that made me march over and say, take my money, I need this book. Okay. Identity Politics. I buy a Mana Party t-shirt from AliExpress. $9.99 free shipping via Standard Post. Estimated time of arrival, 14 to 31 working days. Tracking unavailable via DSL. Asian size, extra, extra large. I wear it as a dress with thigh-high vinyl boots and fishnets. I post a picture to Instagram. Am I navigating correctly? Tell me. Which stars were my ancestors looking at? And which ones burnt the black of searching irises and reflected something genuine back? I look to Rihanna and Kim Kardashian, shimmering in Swarovski crystals. Make my eyes glow with seeing. I am inhaling long white clouds, and I see rivers of milk running towards orange oceans of sunlit honey. Tell me, am I navigating correctly? I want to spend my money on something bougie, like custom-made Ponamu hoop earrings. I want to make them myself, but my line doesn't trace back to the beauties in the south making amulets with elegant fingers. I go back into blackness. I go back and fill in the gaps, searching through archives of advertisements. Welcome to the wonderland of the South Pacific. Tiki bars, traffic light cocktails, and paper umbrellas. Tell me, am I navigating correctly? Steering through, this storm drunk and wet-faced, waking up to the taste of hangover, a dry mouth, a strange bed, a shirt above my head. Shirt above my head is the flag fluttering over everything. What were we celebrating? The 6th of February is the anniversary of the greatest failed marriage this nation has ever seen. In America, couples have divorce parties. We always arrive fashionably late. Tell me, am I navigating correctly? The sea our ancestors traverse stretches out farther than the stars.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Do we want to have a little bit of... do we want to say anything about that?
Well, I don't know. The thing with poetry that I have found is it is so much more subjective the way that you react to every poem than a book is.
Mm.
Because what you probably heard in that, I probably heard something slightly different. But I do think that that poem really encompasses the collection.
Yeah.
It's looking to the past. It's looking to the future. It's about colonization and the different forms that it takes. And it's about how lost a lot of people feel and disconnected.
I think the thing that I really took away from it was just such an authentic young voice. Like, I don't suffer from any of the effects of colonization.
No.
But I do know that feeling of being young and trying to do the right thing and to be the right person, I guess.
She's so unapologetically young, female, and Māori. And you can tell in every single poem
and
that
I
she
think
writes.
There's this, she's actually said that, like, this confidence, there's a confidence in her writing, which
absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's this confidence that makes, there's this palpable anger in quite a lot of the poems that you can feel. And she said that this confidence that she has in her writing and in life is quite a conscious choice and that it's a defiance of, like, the legacy of colonization and also in defiance of, like, our habit to have tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, she's claiming her power and you can just feel that in the poem.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and actually speaking of that anger, I reckon that goes quite nicely with the poem that I'm going to read out. So this poem is one of her shorter ones. It's called Sensitivity. 248 years since Captain Cook landed. 14 years since Whale Rider was released. Keisha Castle Hughes is speared through the heart by a white man with a ship in the television series Game of Thrones, Season 7, Episode 3, 52 minutes and 22 seconds in.
Chills.
Oh, it's so good.
It's such, so good.
Such a good poem. Like, so short, so to the point. And it tells a story, and that's probably my favourite thing about this book. Every single poem tells a story. There's characters. There's
storylines.
There's perspectives. You know, and it's not just her.
It's so impressive to be able to say so much in so few words. It's a skill that I haven't got. But I'm trying.
What has really made me realise is... Mm. It's actually made me appreciate prose writing more or less, and just made me, I guess, finesse the way that it's to have writing, and appreciate and the skill in writing more.
Reframing the way that you're seeing writing, which I think is like the most helpful thing about poetry is you were scared about reading poetry. And
oh my God. And absolutely, I've avoided it for 10 years.
As you should be. A lot of the poetry that they teach, a lot of people go, do you understand this poem? And I go, absolutely not. I have no idea what they're saying. Absolutely none. But this poetry is so clear, crisp and clear and fresh. And this story, it's just so good.
And the last thing is, it's also compulsory. So you have to go and buy it. You have to go and buy it, and you have to go and read it.
But I honestly believe that in 10, 20 years, Tay's going to be one of the
poets.
The poet. We had a local Dunedin writer called Victor Billow, and loved his poetry. I thought it was really, really cool. And I think I misjudged him when he came in. He's an older kind of southern man.
Mm-hmm.
And we were asking him, you know, what are his influences? And he was like, well, one of my biggest influences lately has been Tay Tibble. And I just didn't see that, but I should have. Cause she's just so brilliant. But I hope
she is phenomenal.
I hope with my entire heart that in 10 years, primary school is going to be one fucking teaching te reo Māori. Seriously.
And then senior school, Tay Tibble.
In high school, they're teaching
these three books.
And also Freya Daly Sargrove. We'll talk about her next season. She's fantastic.
Oh, bold.
I already know. I'm going to give you the poetry and you're going to be like, yeah, I love her.
And I feel like that probably sort of rounds out our thoughts. Just wanted to quickly say, Tay Tibble's new poetry collection has just come out. So if you're... But go buy the first collection first. Or the second collection.
Just get back
to
them.
Surely there's a deal.
Beautiful cover art as well.
Stunning, stunning. And one last thing.
Yeah.
Read poetry aloud.
Absolutely.
Never read it just... Because it also forces you to read it slower.
Yep.
And you need to do that with poetry.
Well, the reason why poetry is so good is because it's lyrical and it's about sound. It's about how the words sound and how those sounds play against each other in the order that they're presented. And you don't get all of that by just reading it with your eyes.
No. So just do it. And also it's kind of fun to be sitting in your bed and just
I'm reading a poem to myself.
Yeah. So honestly, these three books are all fabuloso.
Absolutely.
And go and give them all a read.
And they're just written by some New Zealand women who we just so greatly, greatly admire.
Seriously.
I can't wait for what they're all doing next, you know? Yeah.
We're so proud of you.
Oh my God, stop it.
Mum
and Dad are really proud of you.
But before we leave, we still have to judge a book.
By its cover?
And now for the part of the show where Charlie and Amy literally judge a book by its cover.
That's right, we're back and we're going to judge a book.
Oh my God.
That was weirdly robotic. But yeah, we're back. We're judging a book by its cover now.
That's where we judge a book.
We judge a book by its cover. You see, it's a pretty complicated concept there. So we're not doing it by its content, by its cover. And today we have got an instance of the finger post.
Yep. Yep.
By Ian Spears. But it's spelled
Ian. Ian Pierce.
Oh, yeah, there's no S. But it is spelled Iain. There's an extra I there.
As you can see already, before I even describe the cover, we're struggling with the font choices.
The font choices.
The typography is...
It does look very much... I'm going to guess that this was published in like 2005.
Yeah, I would totally say.
It looks like
Let
that.
Let me set the scene. Okay, yeah. So we've got a black background, just kind of a matte. It's not a colour field, it's just black.
Mm-hmm.
Then down the centre we have, at the top, a small pigeon, dove, a pretty pigeon in flight. Isn't a dove just a pretty pigeon? As we have a pretty pigeon in flight, okay? And then we have, just below that, we have a tiny skull. It has no jaw, though. That's probably not that important to note. Well, maybe. We don't know.
Well, I don't know. Why does it not have a jaw?
Then we have the title. Then we have it's very sparse, which I kind of like. So we have the title and then the author. And then down the bottom, we have an illustration of an open book that looks quite old. And then in between these main parts, we have kind of a...
So this is like
shiny
black. We
have words, but shiny black. Like, you wouldn't necessarily see it.
I've tried to capture it in the photo because I was worried that you wouldn't be able to see it, but you can, which is nice.
But so it's kind of like invisible writing.
Yeah.
You know, like you can only see it if you catch the light, which I quite enjoy.
Yeah, it's kind of mysterious.
And so we've got pretty pigeon right underneath. We have lust. Then we have skull. We have betrayal. And then we have the title. Then we have secrets. Then we have Ian Pierce. And we have murder. Okay, so lust, betrayal, secret, murder. And then down the bottom, we have a quote from P.D. James. P.D. James wrote a sequel to Pride and Prejudice where somebody got murdered at Pemberley.
I think my
mother thought it wasn't very good.
The back of the
that
book?
Was that P.D. James? I don't know. Anyway, it says, fictional tour de force, which combines erudition with mystery.
Yeah, erudition.
What is
erudition?
That?
Erudition, like... Erudite.
Yeah, but what is that?
Being truthful.
Oh.
Also, like the back doesn't have a blurb. It's just reviews.
I hate when it's that.
I hate it that. How am I supposed to... What's going to make me read the book? Just other people going like, it's amazing?
What's
Every
it about?
Book says that.
I know.
Every single every book just has reviews
you know,
being
it's
like, it's
same,
amazing.
It's the same thing as how every time you go to a show now, like a gig,
yeah,
there's always an encore. It's not even about the encore anymore. It's like they wait for the encore and then the encore is planned and they come back out and they do the rest of their set.
They have specific songs that they've
They're saving for the encore because they know they're going to get one because we just do that now.
Uninteresting.
And it's the same with the praise pages
in the
books. Okay, we know.
This isn't going to convince me.
Sometimes it is. Depends who it is, you know.
Yeah. Not P.D. James. Not them.
Right.
Okay.
This is really stirring something up in us.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I like the lust, betrayal, secrets, murder.
I love
like,
that.
And
I love
that
the
it's
invisible.
Secret.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like the spacing. I quite like the pictures, actually.
I like
hate
the
typography.
I hate the typography of the instance of the finger post.
Can barely read it.
Also, what is that title? I'm not. It's not inspiring anything in me. It should just be called Lust, Betrayal, Secrets,
and
Murder.
I also don't like that instance is capital I.
Guns,
and
cars, and drugs.
Lust, Betrayal. I love the second chair of book, Lust, Betrayal, Secrets, and Murder.
That was me clapping. I love to clap.
But instance has got a capital I and finger post is not. Have you noticed that?
Oh, God, that's horrible.
Hate that. Why did they do that?
And also, the S has this really wild swirling that's going on, that's going up and around, and it's very hard, making it hard to read.
Yeah, and then all of the reviews. Look, all up, there's things to like, there's things to hate. I'm going to... out of how many words, how many of them are invisible? Invisible's good.
Invisible is good?
Yeah.
How many's good? Out of how many...
Out of four.
I can't believe you had to count for that. Wait, I'll just check. Just
one, two, three.
Wait, no, that's two, three, four. Okay. Four. How many words are invisible?
Out of four.
Four words.
Yeah. And you can go into decimals.
Should we do it at the same time? Or do we want
to
do it?
I need to think. Got it. You ready?
Yep.
Three, two, one.
2.25. And a full stop.
One and a full stop.
Well, I just wanted there to be a little bit extra than one word, but not quite two.
So there's some punctuation.
Maybe like one full word and then maybe kind of a conjoining word, like an and.
Right, okay.
You know, not a full word.
A half word.
Not a word with meaning, but
one that you wouldn't capitalise.
Like a functional word. You know, you wouldn't capitalise it. I mean, unlike they've done it.
Ian Pearce that. I think it actually is quite aesthetically pleasing. I just don't like the typography mostly.
Well, it's just that one line that's the instance of the finger post. Everything else I do like. But it's
which is
really
a shame
ruined it.
And it is the title of the book. Yeah. So it's a pretty big thing to not like.
So that's our last judge a book by its cover for the season.
Season 2. I can't believe we finished. Actually, we're going to have a mini-sode next week.
We are. We haven't decided what it is yet, but.
So, yeah, that. Yep. Fully wraps it up for season 2. Thank you so much. This has been a really fun season. I feel like we've had a lot of laughs. We've gotten pretty serious.
I feel it's like we've challenged good. Ourselves.
And I think we've gotten better.
Yeah.
Well, I hope so.
Well, we're trying to be unashamedly confident. Like Tate Tibble.
And, you know, succeeding. As with everything else we do.
Oh my gosh, stop. It feels so unnatural to me. Anyway,
confident.
Thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you to UBS for sponsoring us this season. That's really cool. We love UBS. I've
seriously.
Been in there 4 times this week and it's only Thursday.
Yeah, I went there literally earlier today. So we love you, UBS.
So thank you so much. And thank you, Radio 1.
Yes, thank you, Radio 1. Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, John. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Sean.
Yeah. Charlie wasn't thanking him.
He was
thinking... Well, then I'd like to say thank you, Charlie, dog Charlie.
Okay, yeah. Yep. And I guess him. Her, sorry.
This outro is going on for a long time. We better wrap it up. How about this? 3, 2, 1, and we do a kiss goodbye. 3, 2, 1.
Mwah, bye.
Thanks for listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. There are heaps more at r1.co.nz.